Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Mark.
It's a pleasure.
So, Mark, Michael Gove was knocked out of the leadership race, leaving Jeremy Hunt to face off against Boris Johnson. What is it that's made these two candidates rise out above the others?
Well, look, I guess that it's very hard to say, really. The Tory party, the British Conservative Party, has been in such a state of disarray for such a long time. And we've seen the Prime Ministership of Theresa May just, you know, lag from crisis to crisis to eventually its painful end. And we're now in this process, this very drawn-out process, quite foreign to us in Australia, really, the way these things happen, of selecting a new leader. As you say, there were all these other people in the race, people like Michael Gove and Rory Stewart and others, names that most Australians wouldn't know of,
mm-hmm.
Who all put their hands up for the Prime Ministership, effectively. But they all seem to be Brexiteers. They all seem to be people who are in favour of Britain leaving Europe and in some cases in favour of Britain leaving Europe no matter what. That is, without any sort of deal, without any sort of other arrangement.
So that was like the do-or-die kind of statement that Boris Johnson made.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. So you know, there wasn't really all that much choice. It was just a matter of emphasis. And there's a view that everyone's deluding themselves anyway, because the way the timetable works at the moment, Britain will leave Europe on the 31st of October,
mm-hmm.
Whether there's a deal or not. And Boris Johnson seems to be quite happy to be, and Jeremy Hunt as well now, the two remaining seem to be accepting that that is going to happen. And, you know, there's kind of naive talk about the possibility of it going back to European negotiators and getting a better deal, but there's no signs coming from Brussels that Europe is interested in that sort of thing. So, as I say, there's this kind of parallel reality going on at the moment, and we're just going to have to see where it ends. This process of selecting the leader doesn't even conclude until the 22nd of this month, and, you know, the clock's ticking.
Yeah, it's so pretty close.
It's really pretty much a looming disaster.
So with the, you know, October 31st looming, is there, you know, the current Brexit deals failed to pass through Parliament about three times. Is there any real chance that Hunt or Johnson could even persuade the EU to renegotiate this deal at this point?
Doesn't appear that way. There doesn't seem to be any appetite for that. Look, I guess it's always possible that once the Brits have selected their new Prime Minister, and that, you know, that doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon.
Mm-hmm.
That is, you know, once Boris Johnson is Prime Minister, and that looks to be the way it is
going,
an extraordinary result, really, when you consider his personal record and just how he's a kind of like a British Trump in a way, although significantly more literary, I guess. He's a rather gifted writer. But he's mercurial like Trump, and he's shown that he can be quite populist like Trump. So once Britain's actually selected its Prime Minister, presuming it's Boris, then I guess it's possible that some people in Europe will say, look, it's not in our interest to have Britain just crash out and to have all these incompatible arrangements between, you know, an economy of the size of Britain's and the European continent, and that we ought to try and negotiate better, you know, some sort of softening of these hard measures. But as it stands at the moment, there are all kinds of threats facing industry, you know, there are companies that are integrated across the English Channel that have operations on both sides that are going to face all kinds of difficulties, and there are whole sections of commerce that are in some level of panic about this. I was reading somewhere the other day, for example, that a fishing fleet that's operating in the English Channel would have the nearest port that it would have to offload its fishing catch that would not be subject to tariffs in a post-Brexit situation would be in Africa.
Yes, that's quite far away.
Yeah, yeah. So, and that's just one of thousands of different sort of trade and commerce exchange arrangements that would instantly change as a result of there being no agreement between Britain and Europe.
To be clear here, the consequences of a no-deal Brexit, of just kind of crashing out, as you said, is just, you know, how severe are these consequences? You said thousands of, you know, things are going to be affected. How problematic would this be for Britain?
It's hard to say. I mean, what we can rely on is, to the extent that you can rely on anything here in terms of scale, and that is no one really knows fully what the impact will be. You can go sort of sector by sector and look at the different trading sectors and work out what the changes might be and how difficult that might be for those sectors, and what I guess investment dollars will do as a result of that. But British Treasury's own estimations are now really quite gargantuan of the effect on growth of the British economy. Everyone accepts that there'll be a depressing effect on growth, but the cost, I think the last figure I saw was in the 70 billion pound range for the shrinkage of the British economy. You know, it does rather seem like madness, but this is a special form of madness that's been gripping Britain for some time.
Yes.
And it's just sort of lurching towards this now in a it's like a slow motion train wreck.
So I suppose, Mark, at this point there's not much more to do than wait and kind of see what happens.
Well, that's true. The amazing thing is, though, that notwithstanding all of this chaos in the government, you know, the collapse of May's prime ministership and all of this long drawn out process to select a replacement from a, you know, really a cast of rogues in some cases, when you look at the latest polls, the Conservatives are actually still ahead. They've got a dreadfully low share of the vote at about 24%, according to a poll I just read today. But the Brexit Party, that is the party that's operating, really, that's Nigel Farage's outfit that took some seats in the European parliamentary elections recently, that's sitting on 23, so that's coming in second. The Lib Dems are sitting on 20, and Labour is sitting on 18. So here you have the, you know, the alternative government, ordinarily speaking, the Labour Party, is now sitting in fourth place. So while the government's in a state of chaos,
they're still drawing more confidence from the voters than the other options.
That's right. Voters are not saying, "Oh, well, you know, we want to go to Jeremy Corbyn, the Labour leader, 70-year-old Labour leader." There's talk at the moment that there are concerns about his state of health and robustness, whether he's actually up to the job. And of course, he's had a pretty confused position on Brexit the whole way through as well. I mean, his personal position has been reasonably, you know, were clearly understood to be pro-leave, that is, you know, pro-Brexit, but his party is, broadly speaking, pro-Remain. There are people within Labour who think Britain should leave, so it's not a clear delineation between the Tories on the one hand who are in favour of leaving and Labour in favour of staying. It's all just a dog's breakfast.
Wow. All right. Well, thank you so much for helping to clear up a little bit of that, as much as is possible to clear up. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Mark.
Always a pleasure, too.
Absolutely.